Hello all, I made it back. I got back yesterday. I got back yesterday. Literally, I don't know where time has gone, but I did it. Feels great to be back. It's a massive heat wave here though. I am not used to this. It's right now. It's 29 degrees and it's still the morning. It's going to get to 33 degrees. I've been used to -4 to 18 degrees, something like that. So apologies if the sweat is visible. Let's get down to it. Thank you so much, everyone, for continuing to tune in, sharing your thoughts and opinions. I cannot tell you how important and appreciated every single comment, every email, every message is. You are kind enough to share your opinions, and that shapes these podcasts. I personally read every single message, every comment. So sorry I don't get to reply to them all, but every single one of them is massively appreciated, so please continue to do so. Best place to do so, comment section below, and if you have a longer story, maybe with some pictures, you can email hi@choosedobbs.com. Let's get down to it. I watched Itchy Boots' brilliant talk at the Adventure Bike Rider Festival. I watched it on YouTube. Something that really interested me here is the motorbikes to travel the world on. There's a differentiator in Itchy Boots' point of view. Traveling the world and traveling, for example, around Europe. If you're traveling around Europe, you can buy a Ducati Multistrada because you know that you've got coverage from Ducati dealerships all around Europe. You're going to be in good hands. But when you want to travel around the world, no one out in the wilderness of Mongolia, of, you know, deepest in the middle of nowhere, Africa, no one's going to be able to diagnose electrical faults with a brand new Ducati Multistrada, for example. So you're going to be stranded. What you need is something that can be fixed by any decent mechanic on the side of the road. Itchy Boots said, something that's simple, ideally something even pre-ECU, and something with a kickstart is highly desirable. So that got me thinking, what can I find? Pre-ECU, so that will go hand in hand, I think, with pre-fuel injection. Ideally, something with a kickstart. Look, in reality, it's going to be something Japanese because they're the most reliable and they're very rugged. What have I found? 1, 2, 3 bikes on my list that tick, hopefully, all of the boxes. Maybe the best dual sport bikes, and of course, it needs to be dual sport to go over landing, so off-roading and stuff like this. We're looking for simple, tough bikes that can go anywhere. I spent a while doing this. I've got 3 bikes that I think kind of fit in every niche around this area, and it's been extremely fun trying to pick these exact bikes out. Number 1, Honda Dominator, otherwise known as the NX650. Produced from 1988 to 2003. Dual sport motorbike, 650cc, 43 horsepower. This is just perfect. This is a really important bit that Itchy Boots at Gnarly said is essential. There's no point having a big heavy bike if you can't pick it up by yourself if you're all alone when you drop it. This is 167 kilos, a relative lightweight. Again, I found these really hard to find in the UK. I found it much easier looking for one of these over in Europe. Bear in mind, carburetor, no ECU, no ABS, fixed by any mechanic, and if you buy one of the early models of these, has to be one of the early ones, so look for 1988, maybe to 1990, they come with a kickstand. So if you're left stranded and your battery's dead, you will be able to get it going. And that is so important for a proper overlanding trip. Look what I found. The Italians seem to love these. On Auto Scout 24, Honda NX 650 from the year 1989. So this is kickstart. There's the little kickstarter. Yes, it's true. The first 2 years, they all still had the kickstarter. 2,200 euros. What's that? Haven't done the maths, but it's got to be about £1,800 or something like that. And because it's over 30 years old, instead of paying the big 30% duties for us Brits to go and get this bike, it's just 6%. So you don't even have to worry about all these crazy import duties and stuff like that. Go over to Italy on a road trip. You can ride it back. It's going to be so reliable. 67,000 kilometres on the clock. There you go. There's a proper overlander that will take you anywhere you want to go. Number two on my list, it has to be Gnarly's Itchy Boots' Yamaha Tenere XT600, produced from 1984 to 2003, 45 horsepower, 156 kilos. This is just the sweet spot, clearly, for these kind of bikes, around about mid-40s for horsepower, and this is just 156 kilos. These bikes were light, and this is from a 600cc engine. Kickstart with these. Interestingly, I think kickstart on these Tenere's stayed all the way through to about the mid-1990s, to the best of my knowledge. No ECU. Tough as old nails, and prices for these, incredibly, start at €1,500. It's about £1,200. Again, get one older than 30 years old. For us Brits, you don't have to worry about any high import duties. Look at this one in possibly the best colour. That beautiful blue with that classic 1990s yellow seat. This is such a good looking bike. I got so excited looking for these. These mid-90s or late 80s dual sport bikes, with their colour combos, their ruggedness, their simplicity, they're the kind of bikes that you just get so excited about. 1990 model, 50,000 kilometres on the clock. The photos say everything that I need to know from a private seller. In fact, I think this may be, this is Italian as well. The Italians love, they love these old bikes, the Italians. Two amazing looking bikes. I'll do one final one, slightly smaller capacity, smaller CC. Suzuki DR350, produced from 1992 to 1999. 30 horsepower, 118 kilos. This is crazily light. 118 kilos, that's unthinkable now, surely. MCN say this about the DR350, quoting here, Suzuki's dirt simple, dirt plugger is the bedrock on which greenlaning, that's the UK term for off-roading, is based. Simple, rugged, and cheap. The Suzuki DR350 is an easy motorcycle to own forever. It's got its faults, such as poor finish, weedy engine, and a few too many kilos. God, that's a sign of the times. But it's endearing and enduring. If you're buying a Suzuki DR350, make sure you get a post-1995 electric start version. No thank you. I want a pre-1995 with the kickstart so I can get out of trouble if the battery decides to die. So Facebook Marketplace, I found one in the UK, British bike this, for, I wasn't even going to do this bike, but then it popped up and I thought, God, that looks quite nice. This will have to be included. Here it is. This just popped up and it was not going to be on my list, but it looks so lovely and it's good to do a smaller capacity. 1994 model, kickstart only, long MOT, the bike kicks over really nice, new chain, exhaust, yada, yada, yada. Lovely looking bike, £2,100. These are not expensive bikes. It's really tempting. If you compare these, for example, a brand new Suzuki V-Strom 650, that is, in essence, the equivalent to the Suzuki, or in essence, the equivalent to the Honda Dominator NX650 or the Yamaha Tenere XT600. Those bikes from the late 80s and mid 90s. They're 156 to about 165 kilos. This Suzuki V-Strom 650, the brand new 2025 equivalent, 213 kilos. It's true, new bikes are getting much, much heavier. Let's have a look at the new Yamaha Tenere, the weight of that. That's the 700cc bike and the new equivalent of that old XT600 Tenere that Itchy Boots has. The new one's 205 kilos. These are huge increases in weight. Found that fascinating. Jim over in the US kind of backs up this theory here. Take a listen. When the Honda CT125, that's the Honda Hunter, in other markets it's known as. I did a piece on this about 2 weeks ago. When the Honda CT125 was introduced here in Oregon, USA, I had to have one. A blast from the past. So I went to the local Honda dealership and the waiting list, when I went, was already 18 months. That's how popular these retro Hondas are. The dealers who had them in stock were marking them up to over $6,000. They kind of fizzled out after a while, but it turns out that while the quality of manufacture is phenomenal on these bikes, it's basically an expensive novelty bike, but inferior in some important ways to the previous old models like the CT110 and the CT90. Take, for example, my CT90. That's a 1973 bike with less than 1,000 miles on the clock. I think it spent most of its life on a rack on the back of a motorhome. My CT90 is better on the trail, even with having only 7 horsepower versus the 9 horsepower of the new one. And that's because it's substantially lighter, and it also has, I did not know this, a dual range. That's high-low transmission, like your Jeep Wrangler. God, that really is a proper focused off-roader to have that. It's a true mountain goat in the backcountry. It has a spare fuel tank and a handlebar that can be rotated 90 degrees. That's really, really useful for putting on the back of a receiver hitch rack on the back of a car. So what's missing from this old bike? Electric start, but that's not needed on a Trail 125. ABS ditto, not needed. Electronics, computers. Look, if you break down in the Oregon Outback because of a faulty kickstand safety switch, which bike would you rather have? An old CT110 or an older CT90 or the brand new 125? Electric fuel injection is superior. However, the carburetor on my old CT90 can be overhauled in an hour or so in the middle of Mongolia by a local goat herder. I bet the Aussies will never let go of their old 110s. I have not seen a 125 out here, but the old bikes like mine are plentiful. Jim, USA. Jim, fascinating insight. And it really does back up what Norrally Itchy Boots was saying in her fantastic talk. Moving on, sports tourers are dead. This is the topic from last week. A lot of you, this was really fun reading the opinion and the feedback from all of you. A lot of you said, Freddie, this is just not true. Sports tourers aren't dead at all. I could have read out a lot of people disagreeing. One of them is RG Essex. Freddie, in relation to sports tourers being dead, confirmation bias? And I'll do one more. At Black One UK, sports tourers are definitely not dead. Kawasaki Z1000SX, Suzuki S1000 GT, BMW S1000 XR, BMW 1250 RS, Kawasaki H2SX, the Motor Good CV100, Triumph Tiger Sport, etc., etc., are all part of the current sales offering and selling reasonably well. Here are my sources for saying sports tourers are dead. Let's take a look at the official press statistics for May 2005, year to date. So May 2005 back to May 2004, the most recent data available. If we look at the touring section for motorbikes, the sales are by far the fewest, not even close to anything else for touring motorbikes. 836. And in that touring motorbikes, of course, you're going to have touring bikes and sports tourers. So the share of the pie, the percentage, gets even smaller. And even if you combine it into road sport bikes, because the lines are so blurred now, even that, you're going to be way, way down. So that is where I got the confirmation that sports tourers, that they are not big sellers. Also, the sales numbers are going down. So there's nothing here, certainly in the UK, to say that sports tourers, touring bikes, are picking up at all. The past year, they sold 836. If we go back 2 years ago, well, they sold 1,000, still tiny, 1,259. So look, it's still niche. They're still not big sellers at all. And I would say, relatively speaking, still, certainly in the UK, sports tourer segment, it's still dead. But thank you all for the feedback. And as always, I welcome anyone who'd like to add to that or tell me I'm completely wrong. I'm going to carry on in this vein. BMWs, premium motorbikes in general, highly complicated premium vehicles, far from being good used buys, are they actually the exact opposite of that? This is from Alan Hughes. Now, I know Alan has been burned badly by BMW. So Alan is not a fan of this brand, but take a listen from Alan. Folk are like sheep. Hence, as always, the BMW at this moment seems to be the in thing. Just hang on a few years if you're silly enough to get one for peanuts on the used market, and then you will see what a massive mistake it was. Just like meeting your dream film star or hero and thinking, Jesus, is that what they're really like? Alan, I had to read this one out, so thank you for sharing this. Okay, bear with me. Remember that from Alan. And then from Dwayne, he says this. One man's trash is another man's treasure, Freddie. I picked up a 2009 Honda ST1300 2 years ago. Known better in your neck of the woods as the Honda Pan-European. It was extremely well cared for over two previous owners and sold by the original dealership. I only had to put down $6,500, I think this is US dollars, and even now with 60,000 miles on the clock, it's an absolute magic carpet ride. Do you know what, Dwayne, you're not the first one to describe it as that. These are meant to be phenomenal. 135 horsepower, endless torque in all gears, smooth as the devil's bum, and that big V4. Still getting 45 to 50 miles per gallon, even with a wet weight of 760 pounds. Honda calls the colour glory red, and I must say I agree with them. If the sports tourer has fallen out of favour, then why do so many people stop me in parking lots, at petrol stations, and even at stoplights just to ask me, what is that? It's beautiful. So remembering Alan's opinion on older BMWs and the fact that they can just be a money pit and a pain in the backside once they get to a certain age, and also remembering Dwayne's very good feedback on the big tourer, the Honda Pan-European ST1300, I'm going to compare 2003 onwards BMW R1250 RTs to the less premium, theoretically, Honda Pan-Europeans from the same era. This for me is fascinating. If I look at the 2005 to 2010-ish BMW R1200 RT, always on Auto Trader to keep this as fair as possible, the prices start from £2,300 for a 20-year-old bike. And this is really important because after 15 years, premium vehicles, whether it's BMWs, whether it's Land Rovers, whether it's Ducatis, they start to drop off a cliff because they are so mind-blowingly complex. People start freaking out and thinking, look, I cannot own an old BMW, an old Land Rover, an old Ducati, because the electrics are just going to bankrupt me. And this is proof here. £2,300, these premium BMWs start at. If I compare it to its rival of the time, the cheaper to buy Honda ST1300 Pan-European, these prices start, same bikes, from £1,000 more, the starting price, £3,500. This would have been a cheaper bike when it was brand new, far, far less tech going on with these. Yet the residuals are way, way better. Because if people are going to buy old bikes pushing 20 years old plus, people want to know they're not going to bankrupt themselves. And if you want a safe bet with one of these mile munchers, most people realize you're going to want to buy Japanese. And that's why the residuals are just infinitely better for this more affordable end of the spectrum when new Honda compared to the far more premium BMW. But what is the exact period when the premium vehicles, when their residuals go from solid to worthless? I'll try and do a demonstration of this, because if you look at any BMW, any Ducati from about 10 to 12 years old, they're perfectly decent at holding their residuals. Get to about 20 years old, and this is where they drop off the cliff. This is where people just stop trusting these older vehicles. So I am going to compare 2003 to 2005 BMWs with Suzuki. The prices start for 2003 to 2005 bikes at £2,200. That's the starting point. But look at this. For BMWs, they've actually become cheaper than Suzuki's once you hit that 20-year mark. £950 for the starting price of a 1000cc plus BMW, even the next one, the big R1150RT, even that is under £2,000. So BMW's dropped so much, they drop lower than the more budget-friendly end of the big brand spectrum, the Suzuki's. And if we compare this, for example, to 2008 to 2012 bikes from BMW, the starting price for 2008 to 2012 is £3,250, but with Suzuki's there, it's exactly the same. So in this transitional period of around about 13 to 15 year old bikes, it's basic parity between Suzuki's and BMW's. Get to about 20 years old and BMW's just continue to fall off the cliff. And it's not just for bikes. I'm going to do one with cars as well, and I find it especially fascinating with cars because there are so many more car drivers than bike riders. You're going to get a gigantically broader spectrum of experiences and usages here. You're going to really see the quality of longevity in vehicles. So if I take a look, for example, 2008 to 2010 BMW 3 Series, the classic family car, put this into Auto Trader, prices for these start at £550 for just a 16-year-old premium vehicle, a 3 Series BMW. What's even more fascinating from this starting point of £550 is that six of the first eight 3 Series Beemers from 2008 to 2010 on Auto Trader at time of recording are being sold as spares or repairs with engine or electrical issues. That perfectly demonstrates that once these vehicles get to a certain point, they're far too complex. No one's going to spend £2,000 on a vehicle worth £500 trying to sort out these complex issues. And if we compare this to the absolute budget end of the spectrum, the Kia Ceed, the South Korean family car that would have been infinitely cheaper when it was brand new, exactly the same as before, 2008 to 2010, you can see prices start at £869. Prices are way higher for 16-year-old Kia Ceeds at a starting point than they are the old BMWs. And from the Kia Ceeds, just one out of the first eight is advertised as needing any kind of engine work. Just one, compared to six for the BMW. There we go. I'll move on. Bike of the week. Thank you all for sharing that. God, I love stuff like that. Bike of the week, this is from MJ Brennan. Oh, I had to choose this. So many people were messaging this. Sports Tourer, bike of the week. What is the ultimate sports tourer? I'm not talking about out-and-out speed. I'm talking just about the most rounded, perfectly balanced, durable bike that's over-engineered. Take a listen. Freddie, I just did 3 weeks on a 2001 Honda VFR 800, Switzerland, Italy, up through France, England, and to Glasgow. No problem at all. Also received a fair bit of interest in the bike and nice comments. And this is from Charlton, continuing with this. I was at both Dave Day charity events, that is a 700 mile round trip from Ace Cafe to Barrow and Furness, and a trusty steed both times, Honda VFR 800. Mine's a 2002 I've owned from 19,000 miles. Now it's just under 50,000 and it hasn't missed a beat. These were built at arguably, this is important, the pinnacle of Honda build quality alongside bikes like the Blackbird in the late 90s and early 2000s. Huge luggage capacity, V4 engine, aluminium everywhere, frame, passenger footrests, handlebars, clamps, etc., etc. So actual rust potential, incredibly small. Fantastic bikes can be bought for bargain price as they're currently out of fashion. That's Charlton, the lonely biker on YouTube. Let's take a look at this. MCN, they sum it up so well. I love this. The 2001 to 2012 Honda VFR. Back in 1986, Honda's VFR 750F redefined what and how good a sports tourer could be. Massively, this is the key, massively over-engineered in a bid to erase the reliability issues that had plagued and ultimately sunk the previous VF 750F. The VFR went on to set the standard for the class throughout the 80s and 90s, eventually growing in capacity for 1998 into the first VFR 800. So we're looking at 1998 onwards. They have 107 horsepower, 218 kilos. They have superb handling, V4 engine with loads of character, and brilliant luggage potential. So for that legendary reliability, 1998 onwards, but I've heard from what I've seen online, the 2002 to 2012 period is the famous no expense spared era of these bikes. I saw some reviews from the 2014 onward bikes, and they said, look, these are fantastic. In fact, they often get even better reliability reviews from owners than the 2002 to 2012. But it's noted that the key era, even from owners of the newer bikes, where there is no expense spared, where Honda went all out, like, we've got to fix our reputation from the 750. We're going to put everything into making this the very best bike possible. Premium everywhere. If you want that era, it's 2002 to 2012, and I have found one all for you, a very nice example, Facebook Marketplace. $1,500 for 2002 model, bang on exactly the one you want, listed 2 days ago in silver, insanely over-engineered. And I almost can't believe it's 23 years old. They've aged so well. You can see that aluminium frame, the quality of the plastics, superb, superbly built bikes. I can tell just by the look of it there. So there we go, bike of the week, the unbreakable, do-it-all, premium finish Honda VFR 800. Thank you so much all for watching. Really hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you in the next one.